This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Last Monday, detained suspected armed separatists from the English-speaking Northwest and the Southwest regions began protesting what they called marginalization by French-speaking inmates and prison staff.
That's Moki Edwin Kinzeka reporting from Yaoundé. Details next. Also, Kenya's president today named a new labor minister after the previous minister was accused of corruption. And Ugandan pop star and opposition politician Bobby Wine today formally launched his presidential bid for the 2021 election. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, many families in Cameroon are inquiring about the whereabouts of their loved ones after rioting was reported in two of the country's main prisons. Inmates at a prison in the capital Yaoundé and one at Boué, one of the main cities in the Anglophone Southwest region, are protesting the government's crackdown on the Anglophone separatist movement. As Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from Yaoundé, the inmates also have other grievances.
21-year-old university student Terence Meme says he has been searching for his father, Patrick Meme, since he heard that inmates of the Yaoundé Central Prison at Kondengi began rioting.
We have not heard from him and we have not seen him for the past 2 days. And we are very worried because he is a diabetic patient and he needs regular assistance and health care.
Terence says his father was arrested in the English-speaking northwestern town of Ndu in February 2017 and transferred to Yaoundé, where he has been in pre-trial detention as a suspected separatist fighter. Last Monday, detained suspected armed separatists from the English-speaking northwest and the southwest regions began protesting what they called marginalization by French-speaking inmates and prison staff. They denounced overcrowding, judicial delays, and what they described as deplorable conditions at the Yaoundé prison, which was constructed for 750 people, but now holds more than 6,000 inmates. Demonstrators included jailed supporters of Maurice Kamto, the head of the opposition Cameroon Renaissance Movement Party, or CRM. He is being held at the Yaoundé prison in connection with a protest that is distinct from the separatist campaign. The CRM had previously asked for dialogue to resolve tensions between the French and English-speaking regions. The Secretary General of the CRM, Christophe Ndong, also serves as Kamto's lawyer. Ndong says since the rioting began, the CRM has not been able to determine the whereabouts of several of their supporters, including CRM Vice President Mamadou Mota. Mota has been in prison for leading protests seeking Kamto's release. Ndong says several of the CRM supporters were seen being brutally taken away.
It is another aggravated situation where the government, after arresting all our leaders for a peaceful protest march, is really doing things with impunity. You even see the brutality the police were exercising. And in fact, it's doing this kind of criminal act with impunity. That's not the kind of government we think should rule us.
In a release, Communication Minister and Government Spokesperson René Emmanuel Sadi refuted reports that some inmates were killed, but said many people were wounded and two were rushed to the hospital. Sadi said about 170 inmates who were identified as leaders of the rioting had been arrested. He did not specify where they were taken, but said some inmates had been moved to other facilities to make the Kondengi prison less crowded. Rights group Amnesty International has called on authorities in Cameroon to refrain from using excessive force against prisoners, and independently and effectively investigate the use of firearms and live ammunition reported during the riot. A second riot was reported at the Boya Central Prison on Tuesday. The government said the military intervened to restore order but provided no other details. The Cameroon National Commission for Human Rights and Freedoms reports an estimated 29,000 people are being held in the country's 80 prisons. Commission Chairperson Chemuta Divine Banda says most of the prisons are congested.
The conditions are unbearable, unlivable. Escaping would be a natural instinct.
Prisons should not be torture centers. We have said this clear and clear.
Scores of people from Cameroon's English-speaking regions have been arrested over the last 2 years during the conflict in which separatists have sought to form an independent state called Ambazonia. The United Nations estimates the conflict has left about 2,000 people dead and displaced more than 500,000 others since late 2017. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Libya's unrecognized government says its forces have repelled a major attack by the Libyan National Army headed by Khalifa Haftar on several fronts in southern Tripoli. Haftar's forces, however, say they have made progress in the battle south of Tripoli. The High Council of State in Libya accuses Egypt, the United Arab Emirates, and France are backing Haftar in his new attack on the Libyan capital. The three countries are among the six that recently signed a joint statement calling for a ceasefire. Wolfgang Puschtei, security and policy analyst at the National Council on U.S.-Libya Relations, spoke with VOA's senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shenawi about what is going on in the battle for the Libyan capital.
Well, according to my information, both are somehow correct. The truth is in between. The LNA advanced a couple of kilometers from the previous front lines. They reached the Gaddafi farms about 5 kilometers north of Tripoli International Airport. This is about 3 kilometers of advance. Saladin district about 10 kilometers south of the center. Farnaj district about 9 kilometers southwest of the center. They are still pushing, but they are far from achieving a major breakthrough. So on this, with this regard, the GNA is correct. They suffered some casualties, but inflicted many more on the pro-GNA militias. So with this respect, the LNA is correct. Most of the LNA casualties, by the way, were from airstrikes from combat drones provided and operated by Turkey.
So the United Nations mission in Libya said that it was talking with all local and foreign actors to avoid military escalation and to ensure protection of civilians. Would that work?
Avoiding a military escalation? I don't think so. There is already a military escalation and both sides have no interest in a ceasefire whatsoever. The pro-GNA militias believe that they can hold the defensive lines that they are currently having, and if there would be a ceasefire, they fear that the LNA would use the time to get in some reinforcements and attack thereafter even more fearful than right now. On the other side, the LNA believes that they are close to a breakthrough. I said it before, I have some doubts about this, but nevertheless, they believe it, and so they will certainly not accept a ceasefire. Protection of civilians, for the time being, it more or less works. And it will work as long as the defenders don't establish a new line of defense in the densely populated parts of Tripoli. For the time being, all the fighting is more or less on the outskirts of Tripoli, which is evacuated by civilians. And this is the reason why, fortunately, the number of civilian casualties is, for the time being, rather low.
The High Council of the State in Libya has revealed that Egypt, the United Arab Emirates, and France are backing Libyan General Haftar in carrying out a new attack on Libyan capital. The three states, however, were among the six states which signed a joint statement a few days ago calling for a ceasefire. How would you explain such contradiction?
Actually, as you said, they are supporting the Libyan National Army and demanding at the same time a ceasefire is not really logical. It's more for the media warfare. But we need to be aware that both sides have significant international support. While on one side, Egypt and the UAE are supporting with logistics and training, just short of direct involvement for the time being, UAE delivered also combat drones and turboprop light attack aircraft a couple of years ago, and those aircraft are the mainstay of the LNA advance on Tripoli. France is cooperating with the LNA with regards to counterterrorism in Fezzan. This is their main focus for the time being. But on the other side, Turkey and Qatar are providing logistic and training support. As mentioned before, Turkey is even directly operating combat drones for the GNA, and they are their most successful weapon for the time being. They are inflicting really heavy casualties on the side of the Libyan National Army. I would say GNA and LNA do not need to blame each other for receiving international support. Both are receiving this kind of support.
That was Wolfgang Pushtai at the National Council on U.S.-Libya Relations. He spoke with VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawi. In the Gambia, today, demonstrations in Banjul and other cities unexpectedly turned violent. Protesters in the Bijolo area stormed a police station to demonstrate against the death of a Sierra Leone national while he was in police custody. Protesters said the man died after being tortured, but the claims could not be verified. When police couldn't repel the protesters, they called in the army for reinforcements. The Sierra Leonean, Alaman Darbo, has been living in the country for over 20 years and was married to a Gambian woman. Similar demonstrations were reported in Brikama, where a group was protesting against the chairperson of the council. They accuse him of being incompetent. The Gambia's deputy chief of defense staff appealed to protesters in the town of Serekunda to remain peaceful. Businesses in many areas are closed because of the violence. Malawi protesters have rejected a call by former President Bakil Muluzi to suspend street action to allow for talks to prevent further election-related clashes. Protesters have been calling for the Malawi Electoral Commission chairperson to resign over alleged fraud since President Peter Mutharika's re-election in May. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Former Malawi President Bakili Muluzi urged protesters late Tuesday to halt months of demonstrations so he could mediate with the government authorities over May's contested presidential election. Muluzi, who was Malawi's president from 1994 to 2004, invited the main protesters group, the Human Rights Defenders Coalition, to his home in Blantyre to discuss the issue.
"Please, I want to plead. Would you not give me at least, say, 7 days so that I have time to travel to Lilongwe, meet these people about the issue that you are raising? But if you take a hard line, you know, I don't think it will help anybody."
But protesters rejected the offer and maintained their call for a twice-a-week street action to force Electoral Commission Chairperson Jenny Ansah to resign. Chairperson for the Human Rights Defenders Coalition, Timothy Ntambo, led the talks with Muluzi.
"We respect our former head of state, but as we have spoken time without number, we do not believe in manipulative dialogue. We have strongly advised that demonstrations in itself are not a problem. It's a constitutional right. However, a problem at hand is that Jane Ansah is refusing to resign."
The protesters accuse Ansah of fraud in declaring Mutharika the winner of the May election with 39% of the vote. Runners-up Lazarus Chakwera and Saulos Chilima are challenging the election results in court, alleging ballot stuffing and the use of TVEX collection fluid to change votes. The MEC maintains the election was free and fair. The Malawi's ongoing protests set the stage for further clashes with security. On Sunday, the headquarters of the main opposition Malawi Congress Party in Blantyre, which is seeking annulment of the elections, were burned to the ground. Muluzi told reporters he fears the violence is moving the country in a dangerous direction.
"We must also accept that these demonstrations have caused a lot of economic hardship. You know that. The shops get closed, the banks are not open. There are so many things. I am again appealing to you. Could the demonstration on Thursday be postponed?
Political analyst Vincent Kondowe says with continued protests and no dialogue, Malawi will head toward anarchy. He says Mutharika, Chakwera and Chilima need to reach a compromise.
I think even if the courts today come in and say, well, the elections were conducted in a proper manner, the political disagreements will continue. So for me, the best way is for the leaders to agree to have a rerun. Because even Peter Mutharika himself agrees that the elections were messed up. He has been speaking this in different political rallies that he has conducted.
But Malawi authorities have dismissed rerunning the election. Meanwhile, protesters plan to hold demonstrations and vigils Thursday in all Malawi's major cities, which city authorities are heatedly rejecting. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
20 past the hour, you're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Ugandan pop star and opposition politician Bobby Wine today formally launched his presidential bid for the 2021 election. Supporters cheered as Wine, whose real name is Robert Chagulani, announced his challenge to longtime President Yoweri Museveni. Wine leads the People Power movement. Since being elected to parliament in 2017, he has grown into a political threat to one of Africa's long-serving leaders. He has been arrested and beaten while in police custody and prevented from holding concerts. Chagulani has in recent weeks indicated he was considering a run, but today's announcement confirms it. The singer and several other politicians face treason charges from a campaign rally last year in which protesters threw rocks at Museveni's convoy. There are concerns about legal blocks to Wine's run, including laws requiring presidential candidates to be members of established political parties. Chagulani ran for parliament as an independent. Zimbabwe is still coming to terms with the long shutdown of the main telecommunications provider over the weekend. Business came to a near standstill on Saturday for hours after Econet went out because of electricity shortages. Power generation remains a major challenge in the country, and most Zimbabweans endure 15-hour blackouts. Reporter Kuzai Zanawashi has more.
Unable to make calls or text, unable to get online or to make electronic money transactions. This was the case for customers of Econet, Zimbabwe's biggest mobile operator, on Saturday. Econet customer Dexter Fundire says the shutdown was a huge inconvenience.
The biggest issue with it happening was it happened on a Saturday, which is the days that a lot of families and people, including myself, want to do our shopping and we're trying to get things sorted out for the weekend, and became a major problem because it was near the end of the month. People had just received their salaries and were ready to get groceries from the month, and all of a sudden you couldn't pay for it.
He adds that it was frustrating that nothing was working and he couldn't even call Econet's customer care. Econet has issued a written statement saying it would like to once again sincerely apologize to our customers. It blamed the shutdown on Zimbabwe Electricity Supply Authority power outages affecting the mobile provider's operations center in Harare. The company says the electricity shortages and fuel shortages have made it difficult to maintain good quality service. Zimbabwe Minister of Energy Fortune Chasi recently spoke about long-term solutions to the power cuts.
With regards to power, there are a number of very key determinants of our resolution of this very difficult situation. We all must pay our bills. We cannot fail to pay 1.2 billion to a key utility in the country, but be happy to make all manner of demands on it.
The Zimbabwe Electricity Supply Authority, known as ZESA, is owed millions of dollars by its customers. At the same time, drought has caused water levels to drop at Lake Kariba, a hydropower dam that provides much of Zimbabwe's electricity, and the low water levels have reduced the power generation. Econet is the biggest mobile operator and also the biggest mobile money system, along with a sister bank that runs on their network. All this and other systems or businesses that rely on Econet's infrastructure were affected on Saturday. In Zimbabwe, millions of people rely on their phones to make electronic funds transfer for everything from their rent to their groceries, because the country is desperately short of cash. The power company has faced challenges in collecting the millions it is owed. ZESA has said electricity tariffs are set to increase in August. While Econet has assured its customers that it will be looking into solutions to avoid more outages, the company says it is not sustainable for them to run its own electricity generators for over 12 hours a day. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
St. Louis, Senegal is home to generations of fishermen who say they know no other life or ways to make a living, but rising sea levels and new international regulations are forcing them to change. VOA's Isha Sarai has more.
Fishermen in St. Louis, Senegal come from ancestors who also fished these waters. But many fishermen, such as Ousmane Diop, say conditions have changed. Job says his parents were luckier because in their day, basic traditional rules in the fishing community, like who fished what and where, were well established and respected. But he says now, families are growing and using new equipment. The market has become saturated, not just by families who say they are having more children to help fish, but also by those who once fished in neighboring Mauritania. Increased security in Mauritanian waters means fishermen who go there risk being fined, detained, or even shot. Malik Fall says he has been detained in Mauritanian waters twice in the past year. Fall says that in his experience, you have to pay a fine to Mauritanian authorities. If you can't pay, they confiscate your catch as well as your gear and possibly detain you for a day or two. But despite his difficulties with coast guards in Mauritania, Fall, along with many other fishermen, says the biggest challenge they face is rising sea levels. Fall says the rising sea levels have pushed a lot of their work inland. For example, fishermen who used to leave their boats on the beach are now forced to go around the city and come into the river and leave their boats there. Higher sea levels have taken out a number of buildings along the coast. Tents under which women like Aminta Sek used to dry and cure fish on the beach have moved to a cramped space further inland. Sek says that she has suffered many losses, but the biggest challenge is how tight the new space is. Between the smell of the fish and the heat, she says she feels suffocated. But Sek has to continue her work. Her husband died at sea, and her sons are in school. Unlike many children who leave school early to start fishing with their fathers, Sek's children continued their education. So for now, she alone has to provide for her whole family. Most fishermen and their families also say they have no choice but to adjust to the new conditions, says Mustafa Dieng, Secretary General of the Fishermen Union of Senegal. He says that from father to son, they are fishermen with just this one job. When times are good, they're good. When there are challenges, they suffer. But they continue on. Isha Sarai, VOA News, St. Louis, Senegal.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Werkinger, and our engineer, Rob McLean, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the African Continental Free Trade Area is now a reality that, if successful, will create a $3.4 trillion economic bloc. A closer look at Africa's free trade agreement on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.